Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, the Ocmulgee Mounds get one step closer to becoming Georgia's first national park. The travel rush for the 4th of July holiday has begun, and if you're trying to stay hydrated during this heat, don't wait until you're thirsty.
Drink periodically all the time. By the time you're thirsty, you're already behind on fluids, and the heat can just make it worse.
Today is Thursday, July 2nd. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Dangerous heat is expected to stick around through the 4th of July weekend, with heat index values climbing into the triple digits across parts of Georgia. So, as families head outdoors for fireworks and barbecues and events like Atlanta's Peachtree Road Race, we wanted to check in with someone who knows about staying safe in the heat. Dr. Cecil Bennett is a board-certified family physician with Noonan Family Medicine. He spoke with GPB's Pamela Kirkland.
So we've had several days of this dangerous heat, and it looks like it's going to stick around for a little bit. How concerning is this stretch of weather from a medical perspective?
Well, of course, every summer we worry about heat injury, and I'm glad that your station has taken the time to highlight a very important topic, because heat injury can be very dangerous. The first one we look at is heat cramps, which of course is very common. You know, you're outside, you're working in the garden, you're playing basketball, et cetera. And all of a sudden you start sweating, you feel crampy in your joints, et cetera. This is actually a mild form of heat injury. And in that situation, it's important that you stop the activity that you're doing, move to a cool place, hydrate very well for at least an hour or two before you go back. The two most important ones that we need to discuss today, though, are heat exhaustion versus heat stroke. And there's a big difference between those. When we look at heat exhaustion, we're looking at symptoms of heavy sweating, feeling weak, fatigued, headache, some dizziness, nausea. But the important thing is that you're sweating during this time. Now, someone who has a heat exhaustion, what do you do if you see your buddy that's sweating a lot, they're a little bit dizzy, they're nauseated? First thing to do is move them to a very comfortable, cooler environment. Lie them down, loosen their clothes, try to get some cool compresses on their skin, put water in their skin, et cetera. And you can give them some sips of fluid as they can tolerate, assuming that they're still alert. Now, the one that we really need to be concerned about when it comes to heat injury is heat stroke. And it's very important we identify these symptoms of heat stroke. When we see a victim with heat stroke, we're looking at someone who body temperature is so high that they're not sweating at all. They've exhausted their entire sweating mechanism, and they're not sweating at all. Their skin is very, very warm to the touch. They may be altered mentally, speaking outside of their head. They may completely go unconscious. This is a medical emergency and requires one to dial 911 immediately. Before anyone does anything, dial 911, get an operator on the line to walk you through the steps that you need to do to help this individual. But this is a medical emergency. Get them to a very cool place. Loosen their clothes, go ahead and apply those cool compresses, but it's important not trying to force feed them any fluid. If they're unconscious, we do not want to do anything that could possibly cause aspiration. Keep them as cool as possible, maybe put a cool cloth behind their necks, wet them down as best you can, as I said before. But a critical step here is to identify them with very hot skin, not sweating, altered mental status, and the most important thing to do in those individuals is to call 911.
And then, are there certain groups who are more affected by this severe heat than others?
Definitely. It's always the extremes. First, we look at children who basically play until they fall. And all of a sudden, they get dizzy and they fall out. I mean, so you have to be very careful when it comes to children. And parents or guardians, try to go to parks and have some type of cooling system, the little spouts and stuff of water that the children can kind of run through to make sure they don't have severe injury. And of course, we're looking at the elderly. Our elderly, again, they're immunocompromised to begin with. And my greatest concern with elderly is not necessarily going out into the heat, is that many of our elderly live in environments where they have no air conditioning. Okay, and their home environment can be very hot, and they're definitely subject to heat injury. So if you have an older senior loved one, it's very important that you're checking them on a regular basis on these hot days and making sure that they're okay, they have enough fluids, they're staying hydrated, and they're in a cool place. And if necessary, someone needs to go get them.
It's a weekend when a lot of people are planning to spend time outside for fireworks, for cookouts, barbecues. What advice do you have for people who are planning to spend several hours outdoors?
Well, it's great that we can enjoy the 4th of July, our 250th celebration of our country. Prepare, right? And anything you do, if you're going camping, you want to make sure you're prepared. If you know you're going out in this heat, prepare very well. What do? You make sure you have a lot of fluid. You make sure that you're hydrating regularly. The thing is, don't drink when you're thirsty. Drink periodically all the time. By the time you're thirsty, you're already behind on fluids, and the heat can just make it worse. Wear loose clothing. All this tight black clothing is probably not a good idea to wear out at this time. And check on one another. Just make sure each person's okay, making sure you're staying in safe environments. Of course, there are times you have to walk out in the sun. If you're at an amusement park, you have to stand online. But again, hydrate, hydrate, hydrate.
And the Peachtree Road Race is actually one of the most popular 10K races in the country. For those getting ready to run, what advice do you have for them?
Make sure you're hydrating very well. Make sure you're prepared, okay? Because there's a lot of people out there who think they can run the Peachtree Road Race, who have no business being the Peachtree Road Race because they're at increased risk of heat exhaustion or heat stroke because they haven't prepared properly. But I'm kidding. But from the amateur all the way up to the professional runner, prepare, prepare, prepare. Of course, you're not going to be running with like a gallon of water in your arms, etc. But there's water along the way where they can splash you. You can take a drink. Hydrate, 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 and finish the race.
And Dr. Cecil Bennett spoke with GPB's Pamela Kirkland. One more note on that heat. Experts are advising pregnant women to make a plan before heading out to celebrate. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
Rising temperatures and worsening air quality increase the risks of heat-related illness and preterm labor. Exposure to hot temperatures for a prolonged period in the first trimester can also lead to birth defects. Dr. Keisha Collins is an OBGYN with Community Healthcare Systems. She suggests wearing cool, loose clothing, staying hydrated, and seeking help if you become lightheaded.
When you're not feeling well, you need to let somebody know. I've seen people go down and faint from getting overheated. It can happen very quickly.
Kellen says certain medications, such as SSRI antidepressants, can also create a higher sensitivity to hot and humid weather. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
The 4th of July travel rush is underway, and AAA says it will be the busiest on record. More than 72 million Americans are expected to travel over the holiday, including 2.4 million Georgians. Most will drive, while nearly 164,000 are expected to fly. Travelers should expect heavy traffic through Saturday and busy airports through the holiday weekend. Black church leaders from across the U.S. gathered at Atlanta's historic Ebenezer Baptist Church this week to reflect on the 250th anniversary of the United States. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more on the event.
The conversation focused on building connections across differences, the role of black churches in democracy, and fighting authoritarianism. The panel of three clergy was moderated by Ebenezer senior pastor John H. Vaughn. Panelist Reverend Devin Crawford says the relationship between black people and the U.S. is complex. But black churches model what a better future could be.
We have the tools that we need to recognize and practice human dignity and flourishing within our own space. Prophetic speech, table fellowship, what we practiced earlier today, as we build those relationships that will withstand authoritarian threats like we're witnessing right now.
Panelists told the crowd to continue the fight and never give up hope. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
There are dozens of cities and towns named after George Washington in the U.S. Georgia's Washington is located about halfway between Athens and Augusta. It was incorporated in 1780, before the Revolution was even won, which bolsters the claim that George's Washington was the first. However, that claim is not uncontested.
North Carolina's Washington is a bit older, but we make sure here that we say the first incorporated town because that's what it was.
That's Stephanie Macchia, Director of Historic Properties for Washington. She says the town can have a debate with the Tar Heel State over which one came first. The area is known for the Battle of Kettle Creek, what Macchia calls the most significant Patriot victory in Georgia during the war. The town is planning a traditional Independence Day celebration tomorrow, which will include fireworks, food, a brass band, and a reading of the Declaration of Independence. A new federal bill creating Georgia's first national park at the Okmulgee Mounds site in Macon took a first step toward passage through a congressional committee hearing yesterday, GPB's Grant Blankenship reports.
The change hinges on the bill removing one word, historical, from the name Okmulgee Mountains National Historical Park. But House Bill 9416 will not expand the acreage of the park as an older failed bill would have. Gary Wheat, CEO of tourism marketer Visit Macon, told legislators in the House Natural Resources Committee the name change would still transform the east side of Macon through over $200 million in new annual economic activity.
For Middle Georgia, those numbers translate into careers, expanded tax revenue, stronger entrepreneurship, and a higher quality of life.
The new bill would also place Muscogee Nation land holdings nearby within the legal borders of the nation, but outside any casino development. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Macon.
Georgia is receiving millions of federal dollars to help restore longleaf pine forests across the state. The National Fish and Wildlife Foundation has awarded nearly $3 million for projects in Georgia as part of its Longleaf Landscape Stewardship Fund. The largest grant, about $1.5 million, will go to the Georgia Forestry Commission to restore more than 20,000 acres in the Upper Okmulgee watershed. The work includes prescribed burns and other forest management practices designed to improve habitat for species including the gopher tortoise, wild turkey, and northern bobwhite. The U.S. prevailed in yesterday's FIFA World Cup match against Bosnia-Herzegovina 2-0, and with the win snapped a 10-game losing streak for the U.S. against European teams dating back to a tie against England in the 2022 World Cup. The win also set up a Monday matchup in Seattle against Belgium. With me now for the latest on FIFA World Cup action is John Nelson of GPB Sports. Hey, John, welcome back.
Good to be with you, my friend. It's winter-go-home time.
Winter-go-home. Okay, well, how would you describe yesterday's match, U.S. versus Bosnia-Herzegovina?
Oh, boy. Bosnia and Herzegovina, to give you an idea, they have three defenders who the Atlanta Hawks probably could use. 6'4", 6'4", 6'7". And it was a challenge because they really didn't want to engage offensively. They wanted to turn it into a grinder and then make sure that it would go as long as possible and frustrate the U.S. as much as they possibly could. A couple of opportunities in the first half. You get a goal on the board, and then there was activity in the second half that I know that we're probably going to talk about after this, but you get a goal off of a set piece, 2-0 win. Bosnia and Herzegovina go home. They had a great tournament, and they have a great statesman in 40-year-old Edin Dzeko, but the U.S. were favored in that one, and they got the result they were looking for.
Okay, so you said we were in winner-go-home territory. Lots at stake then for the next one, which is U.S. against Belgium. Mm-hmm. Which is the tougher team to beat, in your view?
Belgium, because we saw what Belgium could bring to the table a couple of months ago at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We can call it that there because a couple of months ago it was Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Currently, they'll be playing in Seattle, but Atlanta Stadium is where all of our activity is currently. But Belgium, very, very talented, but their median average of age is not what it used to be. You have players like Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, Luka Bakio. Saw them at Mercedes-Benz Stadium a couple of months ago, and they created problems for the U.S. But this U.S. team is different from the one that we saw then. They have come together as a family, and they're doing what Mauricio Pochettino, the head coach, is looking for them to do on the field. They will not have one of their strikers, Folarin Balogun, who scored in the matchup against Bosnia and Herzegovina because he had a red card issued on a rather large talking point, shall we say, about the issuance of said red card. And it has been a talking point amongst the media. You won't have Folarin Balogun. You'll have probably Ricardo Pepi up top, but it'll be a challenge. U.S. should be okay in this one if they look at the tape against Senegal that Belgium was frustrated completely for about 85 minutes and then the game turned.
Well, here in Atlanta, soccer fans, English soccer fans in particular, are still checking out the town after seeing England defeat the Democratic Republic of Congo 2-1 yesterday. There was a sizable contingent of English soccer fans behind left center field at Truist Park last night during the Braves game. Overall, John, how's fan engagement in Atlanta been from your perspective?
It's been sold out for every game inside Atlanta Stadium. First and foremost, it is 68,239 times 6. So that's what, 360 and 48, you're having me do math, almost 410,000 folks for six matches at Atlanta Stadium. If you go down the street, you try to get into Fan Fest, you can't. You cannot get a general admission ticket to Fan Fest anymore. It has been one of the most hopping places. And I say that as someone who is constantly searching for the twos and fours. It has been a hopping place. And it has been an absolute party, and it has been a great showcase of what the Atlanta and the Southeast bring to the table when it comes to its appreciation for soccer. And it's not just for the U.S. soccer fan. All of the other countries that have been here, Cabo Verde and Spain and England and DR Congo and Haiti and Morocco, all of these different countries and all these different diaspora who do have footprints here in Atlanta and in Georgia and in the Southeast, you get to share that kind of experience and to be able to sit there and share the sport of soccer, share the sport of football, whether it's at Fan Fest or downtown walking around. It's been a reminder. I mean, Uzbekistan and what they have in suburban Atlanta, to be reminded that all of these different cultures come together under this one umbrella and get to have a shared experience. We get to remind ourselves about what makes sports great and what makes the World Cup the event that it is. It's just sharing the experience with a bunch of different cultures under one roof.
Well, that sounds like a blast. John Nelson of GPB Sports, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Anytime, my friend. I'm going to try and get a nap in. I know it's not going to happen.
I hope you do. I hope you do. And fans who want to find the latest on the FIFA World Cup can check out gpb.org/news. A high school freshman from Fairburn was recently named Gatorade's National Girls Track and Field Player of the Year. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
Melanie Doggett is just 15, but she's been a runner for more than a decade. Last month, she won both the 1 and 200-meter dashes in the Nike Outdoor Nationals in Eugene, Oregon, setting second-best records for freshmen in both events. She says she hopes she can inspire more kids to run.
I just want to be a guiding light and to show other Black girls that this is something they can do, and also other girls and just kids that you can run track and have fun and be a light to the world.
Some of her inspirations include Olympians Wilma Rudolph and Melissa Jefferson Wooden.
So I want to do collegiate track. I want to go pro and go to the Olympics. I want to run all those faces of track and just experience the whole sport in its entirety.
All while hanging out with her friends, watching TV, and doing all the things high schoolers like to do. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
A New Jersey-based company is laying off 70 workers in Georgia. Conduent provides businesses with digital services, including in customer service, HR, and finance. All of the employees are remote workers, serving as customer experience associates and supervisors. That brings the number of layoffs reported to the state of Georgia in the first half of 2026 to more than 7,500. That's nearly 2,000 fewer layoffs than were reported to the state in the first half of 2025. Columbus Water Works is preparing to replace the city's 62-year-old wastewater treatment plant. Officials say the current facility has been treating sewage since 1964, but an aging infrastructure, population growth, and stricter environmental regulations mean it's time for a replacement. The project is expected to cost between $500 and $750 million. The new plant will be built on a site outside the floodplain and is expected to handle nearly twice the current treatment capacity. Construction is expected to begin with design work this year, with the new facility slated to open in 2031. And that is a wrap on this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And remember to subscribe to this podcast. It helps you stay on top of all things Georgia news related. And if you've got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Email us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.